Hey y'all, how's it going? Welcome to the show, it's Anti-War Radio. Oh wait, well, pretty close. It's the Scott Horton Show. It is Anti-War Radio, that's what it is. I am the editor of Antiwar.com, even though that's not my job. I do it anyway. And that's what the show's about. Libertarian foreign policy, meaning opposition to having a foreign policy at all. That's right. Abolishing the empire, that's my only priority here on this show. Or explaining why it should be, anyway. Gareth Porter's going to be on for just a couple of minutes. Short segment, he's got other obligations, but I wanted to ask him about this looming deadline on the final nuclear talks and what he thinks is going to happen. And then Jason Leopold is going to be on. He's keeping his eagle eyes on Barack Obama's torture policy and on the Senate torture report and what all is going on there. Did you see the news about the torture report? Senate torture report fight erupts in chaos. I think it's a Huffington Post original, actually. May have been an AP story at the Huffington Post. But anyway, yeah, I read this story and I thought, the President of the United States is afraid of the CIA. That's what's going on. That's why the President is siding with them and not Dianne Feinstein on this thing. On going ahead and releasing the redacted summary of the report we'll never see. I think he's terrified of them, and rightly so. You know, if you're a president and you're a coward, then, yeah, it follows. You should be terrified of whatever the CIA might do to you if you cross him. Now, for me, I don't know about you. It's probably for you, too, right? If you were the president, then you wouldn't give a damn. You'd just do the right thing anyway, right? Well, that's why you can't be the president, see? Well, anyway, the torture report. Well, the CIA, they committed a bunch of crimes torturing people to death, and everybody knows that the law is the law, and if you break it, then you gotta go to jail, guys. That's the deal, so it's better to just cover it up, keep it all secret, and that way everyone will continue not caring. I don't know what they're really worried about. They think some rogue prosecutor in America is going to try to hold the CIA to account? Yeah, obviously not. In fact, that was some of the recent news, right? I better make sure to ask him about that. That was some of the recent news, was people coming out talking about, well, Durham never interviewed me. That was the special prosecutor who was appointed to have a preliminary investigation into whether there ought to be an investigation into the CIA for killing people, torturing them to death. Remember the Guantanamo documents. If they die, that means you're doing it wrong. And he never did. He decided, in fact, to not have a preliminary investigation or whether to have an investigation into the CIA torturing people to death. And there were people who said, well, he never preliminarily interviewed me. He never even interviewed me about whether we could have an interview. Yeah. You could see why Durham would be afraid, too. All right, well, so, Leopold's going to be on to talk about America, the barbarian torture state. How George Bush and the CIA tortured the limited constitutional republic to death for all time. Oh, you see right there where it says the president shall be the commander-in-chief when called into the actual service of the United States by the Congress. Actually, the president can do anything to anyone as long as he feels like it. That's the law. And boy, did that get quickly passed down the chain of command to all members of the executive branch. All right. The gloves come off. Grab whom you must. Do what you want. Remember that? The gray zone. All right. Leopold on the torture state later in the show. And also, I got a ton of news. Huh. I guess I hadn't really considered it, but maybe we could do some calls if you guys want to do some calls. I got a lot of things to say. The next segment is going to be me, Jesus, trying to speak English coherently, and also trying again to make the 5-minute case, a 7-10 minute case, again against Iraq War 3. I know it's already too late, it's already started, but it could be a hell of a lot worse than it already is, and so, you know, I don't know, man. It's one of those things where I fantasize if I won the lottery, then somehow I'd figure out how to create a gigantic demonstration in Washington, D.C. Somehow, you know, spend the money on the phone banks of people cold calling and getting every anti-war person that we can possibly get to show up and all shout hell no about this. I don't know what to do about it. Except, you know, I don't know. State the case and hope it's beneficial in the ripples. That's all I can do. I didn't win the lottery. And I don't know how to organize a big rally. And I guess, you know, I sat here and watched people rally by the tens of thousands in February and March of 2003. And then the war happened anyway. And I'm sorry, the tens of thousands. That's just in Austin, Texas, where I'm from. Millions of people around the world protested. And then the war happened anyway. We all knew we couldn't stop it anyway. And the war happened anyway, and then everybody went home. Because what are you going to do? The Republicans are going to do what they want, right? Same difference now. Except the thing is, there's a real fight in D.C., and I kind of think that it's at least possible that the president's heart really isn't in this. For his own selfish personal reasons, that he doesn't want to be the president who undid the only damn thing he ever did right, which was abide by the majority rules, democratically elected government of Iraq's wishes that the Americans withdraw their military. Just like in the deal George Bush signed in 2008, that America would be out by the end of 2011. It's sort of like the war with Syria in 2013. He didn't really want to do it. And when he had his out, he took it. I don't think Putin's going to save his ass this time. Not after everything that's happened since then. But right now, if you watch Fox News, and most people who watch cable TV news watch Fox News. Or maybe that's not right, but at least more people watch Fox than the other two. And if you watch them, there's only one question. Air power or more? At least that's the way they frame it. Interestingly, this morning, they were interviewing a guy, Chad something, a former lieutenant general or something like that. I don't know. Some kind of officer. And the way they framed the question, are airstrikes enough? Or do we need ground troops to destroy the Islamic State? And I admit, I didn't catch the whole thing because I was getting coffee from the other room. I come back in and he was summing up basically and saying, and so if the Iraqis don't want to fight for their own country, no, we should not send any more American soldiers to go die over there fighting for them. Which of course is a very jingoistic and selfish and America, you know, empire centric way of looking at it. That this would be a fight for the good of the people of Iraq. And it's not worth sacrificing our guys for them. It's a very cynical way of looking at it when of course it's the American GIs acting on the orders of the American politicians who destroyed Iraq and killed 1 million people and created millions of widows and millions of refugees and destroyed all the ethnic and sectarian minorities and the, you know, religious sect minority groups in the country and turned the whole damn place upside down, created, you know, these are the same people who blame Assad for only because of his cruelty, does there exist an ISIS and a Nusra to oppose him? Well, same thing for the Americans. Only because of the American occupations did there rise up an insurgency to oppose them. We now call it the Islamic State. It was called Al-Qaeda in Iraq back then. But still, that's pretty good for Fox News, right? Stay out. Screw it. Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org.
U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Hey, I'm Scott. Welcome back to the show. So, yeah, lucky you. I don't tweet everything I start to. All right, so listen, Garrett Porter's coming up on the Iran nuclear talks here in a minute, but, so let me just say that, I think, well, let me go ahead and try to appeal to that Fox News watcher in you then. Intervening again in Iraq is bad for America and for Americans. It'll make you less safe. It'll make you and your family 0.00000000001% more the target of international terrorists, which is to say you're still not in any danger. But anyway, it puts America as a whole in danger of having more terrorist attacks take place on our soil, of course. And it costs way too much money that the American government cannot afford with its $17 trillion debt, and that's just the national debt, the one they admit to, not the whole thing. And, of course, all the inflation to make all the wars seem free means bubbles. It doesn't just mean inflation, prices rising for everyone across the board. It means giant bubbles that boom and bust and dislocate the whole economy and ruin people's lives, destroy. It's destroying our country, this empire. You look at what's going on in Ferguson with all this militarization and everything else of the, you know, the police. We're going to get back to that later in the show. This is the choking life, quote unquote, that Osama bin Laden was trying to get us to create for ourselves. It was the exactly predictable response to a terrorist war against the United States. The point being to make us want to go ahead and give up the empire. If this is the cost of empire, a SWAT raid every 15 minutes in America by our wannabe Delta Force deputy sheriffs, then no, we don't want it anymore. If this is the cost of empire, we don't want this much security because it's now way more of a threat to our way of life than terrorism ever could be. That's the point of it. And since we're not supposed to be an empire in the first place, and since it is working so well at getting, you know, the American people to allow their government to destroy our society so badly, it seems like, you know, for those of us who get it, maybe we could try to do more to make the point. It's the empire that's ruining America. That's why America is off track. It's not because of illegal Mexican immigrants. It's not because the president is a black guy. It's not because the conservatives thump their Bible too much or, you know, lack of or too much gun control or whatever. Too much gun control might be part of it. Mostly the problem is America has a world empire and our civilization, therefore, is destroying itself. All right, it's predictable enough, right? You have this much freedom, you have this much prosperity, you have that much money for the government to tax and spend on building itself up into this monster, and so it did. And now, as far as addressing ISIS and terrorism itself, just look at what happened here. It's as clear as day, and any junior high school teacher ought to be able to explain it to the class in one shot and have them understand. When the Cold War ended, George H.W. Bush proved that America was the aggressor. The empire wasn't going anywhere. The empire was not a reaction just to protect the world from domination by the Soviet Union. That had only been the excuse. And he set about to prove it by going to occupy the Middle East. And they used, they really baited him. I don't know if, I guess they didn't really, you know, plan it out this well. But in effect, after baiting Saddam Hussein into invading Kuwait, they used it as an excuse to put American troops on bases in Saudi Arabia to bomb Iraq and blockade Iraq indefinitely. And in doing so, they enraged their former friends, the Mujahideen from the Afghan War in the 1980s, Ronald Reagan's administration, when George H.W. Bush was his vice president, supported the bin Ladenites in Afghanistan and Saddam Hussein and the Ba'ath Party in Iraq. Then in betraying Saddam Hussein and occupying the Saudi Peninsula to do it, he enraged his former friends in the Mujahideen and started their terrorist war against the United States, which is not to play down the role of American support for the Israeli occupations of Lebanon and Palestine in engendering this hatred against us. And the attack started almost immediately. In 1993, Ramzi Youssef tried to blow up the World Trade Center, and he wrote a letter to the New York Times explaining why. Killing Iraqis, killing Palestinians. That's why. Doesn't justify it. It's not a rationalization. It's not making an excuse. Don't let some conservative say anyone who explains the motive is making excuses. Yeah, when the local homicide investigator decides whether it's insurance fraud or a love triangle as the motive for the murder, why, that detective is just trying to explain away the crime. Shut up. That's stupid. Anyway, so Detective Horton here explaining. Yeah, they keep saying over and over again, here's our motive. You keep killing us from bases on our holy land, and so we're going to kill you back. That's what they kept saying. And on top of that, they kept explaining exactly their strategy. One, smarten up, leave us the hell alone. Or two, come on here and fight in our sand, where we can replicate what we did to the Soviets in Afghanistan with your help back in the 80s against you. So what does George Bush do? Exactly what they want. And not only does he invade and occupy Afghanistan, which I told you in the fall of 01 couldn't possibly work. Stupid. That'd be like if someone tried to come and take the Rocky Mountains from the people of America. I mean, short of just total thermonuclear war. Good luck with that. Taking land from men with rifles, taking mountains from men with rifles who are already at the top of them, shooting down at you. Anyway. So not only did he fulfill bin Laden's wildest dreams in coming and bringing the entire military to invade Afghanistan, but then he turned around and, as the former chief of the CIA's bin Laden unit put it, he accomplished what was bin Laden's hoped for but unexpected gift. He overthrew Saddam Hussein, and in doing so turned all of Western Iraq into lawless Osama bin Ladenistan. Jihadis stand for 8 years of war, and so grew up Al-Qaeda in Iraq. This movement, which when that war started to die down, it never really ended. When that civil war started to die down, the one that America fought on the side of the Shiites, some of those guys went back to Libya, started a revolution in 2011. Same for the Syrians. And Obama took their side. He took the side of the bin Ladenite insurgencies against the secular dictators, Gaddafi and Assad, and helped build up, helped create the groundwork, the space, the ground space for the rise of the Islamic State in Syria and in Iraq and now in Libya too, where they're outright declaring their loyalty to Baghdadi. The only split between Nusra and ISIS is that Nusra is Al-Qaeda in Syria and more from Syria, and ISIS is more from Iraq, but they deny the existence of Iraq and Syria now. This is the caliphate now. Iraq and Syria are made up by the British and the French. Those days are over. And it's all America's fault in the first place, all of it. And so now that's only half the case of why not to go back, but I got to interview Gareth for 10 minutes, but then more. Phone records, financial and location data, Prism, Tempora, X-Keyscore, Boundless Informant. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for offnow.org. Now, here's the deal. Due to the Snowden revelations, we have a great opportunity for a short period of time to get some real rollback of the national surveillance state. Now, they're already trying to tire us by introducing fake reforms in the Congress. And the courts, they betrayed their sworn oaths to the Constitution and Bill of Rights again and again, and can in no way be trusted to stop the abuses for us. We've got to do it ourselves. How? We nullify it at the state level. It's still not easy, but the Off Now project of the 10th Amendment Center has gotten off to a great start. I mean it. There's real reason to be optimistic here. They've gotten their model legislation introduced all over the place, in state after state. I've lost count, more than a dozen. You're always wondering, yeah, but what can we do? Here's something. Something important. Something that can work if we do the work. Get started cutting off the NSA support in your state. Go to offnow.org. All right, you guys. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show. Yeah, a little Turbo Negro for bumper music there for a change. That's nice. All right, our first guest today is our good friend Gareth Porter, independent historian and journalist, writer for Interpress Service, ipsnews.net, and truthout.org. And he wrote the book on it, Manufactured Crisis, the previously untold story of the Iran nuclear scare. It's told now. Welcome back to the show, Gareth. How you doing?
Hi, Scott. Glad to be back again. Thanks.
Very happy to have you here. So kind of different than usual. Instead of really interviewing you about actual journalism that you've done, stories you've broken, lies you've debunked lately, at least to start here, I want to ask you to speculate about the very short-term future here. Are we going to get a nuclear deal at these talks in Vienna?
I'm saying probably not, and almost certainly probably not. In other words, it looks to me like the die's already been cast here. At best, they're going to agree to some kind of postponement of the what I think is inevitably going to be a breakdown of these talks. And the reason is that the United States has made a decision really to make demands on both the enrichment side and on the question of lifting sanctions, which are simply not going to be acceptable to Iran. I think that much is clear, that those two issues are not just not decided, but that the two sides are irrevocably on a collision course in regard to those issues.
Okay, so if you were there, can you see a way around? I mean, how to split the difference where both sides could actually be happy about it?
Well, I mean, particularly, let's start with the enrichment side of the equation. There's no doubt in my mind that this is a very clearly a case of the Obama administration adopting a diplomatic position that has nothing to do with the national security of the United States. It has nothing to do with whether or not Iran is going to get a nuclear weapon. It has everything to do with politics, and specifically the politics of dealing with the Israeli lobby and its minions on Capitol Hill, because we know for a fact that John Kerry has just announced that the United States is demanding a position with regard to the level of centrifuges or enrichment capacity on the Iranian side that would give the United States the so-called breakout timeline of at least 1 year. Now, that's that has to be understood in the context of the initial U.S. position announced by Kerry himself last April, and I've written about this several times, that the United States would demand a breakout timeline of between 6 and 12 months. In other words, the United States has moved the goalpost very significantly from its initial position. The Iranians have clearly already met the initial position that Kerry articulated by agreeing, as has been reported by the New York Times and elsewhere, and myself, to essentially draw down its stockpile of low-enriched uranium. If that stockpile is drawn down to close to zero, that would bring the timeline for breakout, this theoretical measure, which nobody believes makes any sense anyway, to somewhere between 9 and 11 months, and let's say 9 or 10 months. And so that already satisfies the initial position that had been articulated by Kerry. But somewhere along the line in June or July, the Obama administration decided that it wanted more and would demand more, at least a year and perhaps more than a year. And that's why they're still demanding, even though the Iranians have already agreed to draw down the stockpile, which would accomplish the same thing as a reduction to a very small number of centrifuges, they're now still demanding that Iran has to agree to a substantive reduction in the number of centrifuges. So that's playing to the political constituency. Again, it has nothing to do with the realities of, the nuclear weapons issue. And I think this simply underlines once again what we've talked about on your show so many times, which is that U.S. policy in national security has nothing to do with the actual facts of the situation on the ground or in the air or anything else. It has to do with domestic politics. Mm-hmm.
So is this just sabotage? This is Kerry making an offer that he knows they can't possibly accept.
Well, I don't know that it's Kerry personally, but yeah, I think it's certainly it's making an offer that they should know that Iran can't accept. But I think that it's determined by some predisposition have a result which can be presented clearly as a defeat of Iran, somehow a victory for the United States over Iran, because it's felt that that's necessary for the Obama administration's street cred with the right wing. So, I don't know whether you want to call it sabotage, but in any case, it's a position being taken in the knowledge that Iran would have a great deal of difficulty, if not, an impossibility to accept that position.
Yep. Yeah. Well, it's unfortunate. Although, I don't know, man. It seems like if they're going to get an extension on the deal, well, we're only headed toward worse times with the Republicans coming into power, but it's still better than just giving up. I don't know.
Well, the problem with the extension at this point is the logic of this situation is that the extension is not going to make any difference. I don't know how the Iranians are going to respond. They may agree to an extension. I don't know. But I think that they have to be aware that there are dangers lurking in agreeing to an extension for the Hassan Rouhani government itself. I mean, they're under fire for going along with an Obama administration, set of negotiations that looks to many in domestic politics in Iran as though it's simply not going to be in the interests of Iran. So, they are going to pay a political price for going along with this. If they understand certainly that the chances of the United States agreeing to a reasonable settlement here on both the enrichment issue and on the sanctions removal issue is close to nothing. I have some doubt that the Iranians are going to be willing to do this. And if they do agree, I don't think that it's going to go beyond January.
Yeah.
So this is not something that is extendable beyond that period. I'm fairly confident.
Yeah. Yeah. So, again, the sanctions issue being very important there. The president can only do so much. He really needs Congress to go along, and that means John McCain and Lindsey Graham. So forget it.
Scott, there are two different issues here. Two very distinct issues.
Oh, real quick too. Or actually, yes. We can go into the break for a minute here. Go ahead.
Okay. So on the part of it that has to do with U.S. unilateral sanctions, you're right that Congress is a big problem. And the only way around that is a commitment by the administration that it would, it would insist that this is in the national interest, that it will use all available means to ensure that the sanctions cannot be applied as long as Iran keeps its word. And I don't know if that's enough, but that would be part of it. And the second part of this problem, more important part, I think, at this moment, perhaps, is that the United States is now saying that even the oil and banking sanctions could not be removed permanently. They would have to be only suspended. In other words, the structure of the sanctions would remain in place. And this is not going to be acceptable to Iran because, as an Iranian economics expert just pointed out in the last few days, if the sanctions are not actually lifted on the central bank of Iran, nobody is going to do business with Iran because they're going to be afraid that they will be regarded by the U.S. Treasury Department as somehow violating sanctions, and therefore they will shy away from it. And so they are very clear on this, that the banking sanctions and the oil sanctions have to be lifted, not simply suspended. So that is a deal breaker right there.
Yeah. All right. Well, I know you got to go, so we'll go ahead and stop there, but I appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Scott.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
That's the great Gareth Porter, everybody. Breaking the bad news. God dang it. I hate bad news.
Hey, all, Scott here for Whole Food Multicomplete at WholeFoodComplete.com. Whole Food Multicomplete is an entire supplement program in one bottle, containing 100% RDA of vitamins and minerals, plus live probiotics, digestive enzymes, antioxidant herbs, energy nutrients, and more. It's made in America using real foods and live probiotics. No chemical synthetics. It's soy-free, gluten-free, and independently tested and verified. They're so sure you'll love it, they're taking 20% off your first order with coupon code Scott Horton. Satisfaction is guaranteed at WholeFoodComplete.com.
All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott. Oh, just covering the news here for you. Jason Leopold will be back on the show here in a little while. All right, well, there's the bad news on the Iran nuclear talks. From the great Gareth Porter. All right, now, so, yeah, I was trying to make the case in the segment before last that this whole terror war in the Middle East is all America's fault. I mentioned that after the first Gulf War and the permanent occupation and blockade of Iraq, plus, of course, the endless subsidizing of Israel's crimes against the civilians they occupy, the terrorists started war against us. World Trade Center 1 in 1993. I think I always leave out one or two here, man. Well, first of all, Rabbi Kane, it was the same group, in New York that assassinated the rabbi in 1989, really, even before the first Gulf War, for obvious reasons. He was the most right-wing expansionist settler movement rabbi. He'd fit right into the center in Israel right now, probably, but. Back then, he was a radical right-wing crazy. Anyway, that means hell-bent on stealing all of the West Bank from the people who own it. Yeah. Anyway, there was the First World Trade Center. There was, in the 3 years between the First World Trade Center and the Khobar Towers attack, I think there's something I'm leaving out. I'll have to go back and check my Peter Lance timeline. He's got it all for you there, but... there was the Khobar Towers attack in 96, there was the African embassies in 98, the USS Cole in 2000, an attempted plot to attack LAX in 2000, all that before the September 11th attack. And as I was saying, just paraphrasing the former chief of the CIA's Bin Laden unit, they're trying to lure America's dumb ass into their desert to bleed to death, literally and figuratively. That's the whole point. Anand Gopal on this show, the great journalist from the Wall Street Journal, Christian Science Monitor, author of No Good Men Among the Living, he's got the letter from Bin Laden to Mullah Omar saying, man, I'm sorry for getting your whole government bombed right out of power and everything and all the dead people. But you know what? Just wait 10 years and you'll see it was worth it, dude. This is all part of the plan. Trust me. It's working. Bin Laden's son told Rolling Stone magazine in 2010 his father was so excited when Bush came out on top in the Florida recount. Because here, this little poser, him and his dad's buddy, Dick Cheney, the two softest-handest, havenest, pretend tough guys in America, outside of the neoconservative cabal that they put in power in the vice president's office. The Secretary of Defense's office and the State Department. And anyway, it would be so easy to lure these idiots into taking advantage and overdoing it and killing the empire. And think about it from their point of view for 1 second. They're a stateless band of pirates. How the hell are they going to take on the Empire? Judo. You know, piss them off, drive them into a rage. Or I know, how about the American Indians fooling the buffalo into running off the side of the cliff? Like that one? As long as we're doing metaphors and stuff. Yeah, we're the buffalo. They're the Comanche. Or the Sioux. Whoever's custom that was. I guess the Sioux. Anyway. So that was the plan. It's been working. And the drone war and doing it all by remote control under Obama ain't much better. Obama's doubling down of Bush's mistake in Iraq by overthrowing Gaddafi and then half overthrowing Assad there in Syria. It was just the absolute worst thing you could have done. It's absolutely as bad as invading and overthrowing and smashing Iraq in terms of the benefit for the bin Ladenites. And of course, this whole thing is a sectarian war that George Bush started. Unknowingly, he took the side of Iran and the Shiites in the sectarian war. And it wasn't that they're fighting over who's a blasphemer or not. They're fighting over power. And he took the side of the Iranians and their Shiite allies in Iraq against his allies, the Saudis and the Sunni Baathists. And so that started a gigantic sectarian civil war for Baghdad that killed over 1 million people. Oh, you know, just 1 million. It doesn't sound like that much when you say it that way, right? How about 999,000 people slaughtered? And anyway, then in doing so, they just set the whole goddamn region aflame. And then, as Seymour Hersh reported in his article, The Redirection, they kind of figured out how stupid they were, finally, and decided that they would tilt back toward the Saudis and against Iran and even their own allies in the Iraq government that they had just put in power there. The King of Jordan identified it, coined the term the Shiite Crescent. The alliance of Tehran, Iran, Baghdad, Iraq, Damascus, Syria, and southern Lebanon where Hezbollah rules. And in fact, they got a part in the government in Beirut, but they don't rule it. But they rule the south, the Shiite south of Lebanon. This is the so-called Shiite Crescent. And so Bush, who, you know, the servant of the Saudi king, did a huge own goal by fighting an 8-year war to put the Iranian-backed Shiite parties in power in Baghdad. So their consolation prize is trying to take Syria away from Iran by getting rid of Bashar al-Assad, who's a secularist but is an Alawite, which is a kind of Shiite pretty much. Even though Alawites predate Shiite Islam, they sort of kind of... Anyway, it's the same damn thing. Anyway, they're kind of Shiite, and... And so that's the sectarian war. America in Iraq is on the side of the Iranian-backed, barrel-bombing, Shiite, Hezbollah militias. In Syria, we're for, still, America is helping to back some of the Mujahideen fighters, which in practice means all of them, against the Iranian-backed Shiite barrel bombers. And so that's the war. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever to be on either side of this sectarian war. Even if you help one side win, you're only doing like George Bush and sowing the seeds of decades of further conflict. Fighting on both sides of the war is exercise in such cynicism as to be almost unbelievable. I mean, I would expect if you took the average adult who's not completely immersed in this stuff but knows a little bit about these countries, you know, enough that they could nod when you explain, you know, the Baathists in Iraq were predominantly Sunni. In Syria, they're still Baathists and secular, but they're more Shia. They kind of, okay, yeah. Man. And you really explain the policy about who all America is backing against who over there? And I think the cognitive dissonance, they just wouldn't believe you. They'd think that the problem was you. But turn on Fox News and they say every day, we gotta take out Assad. Take out Assad? Why, He's the Abadi of Syria. If we got to take out Assad for the Mujahideen, then why don't we have to take out the Shiite parties that we put in power in Baghdad for the Mujahideen? And if we got to help the Shiite Iran and Hezbollah-backed parties in Baghdad against the Mujahideen there, then why are we helping the Mujahideen against the Shiite Iran-backed and even secularist, even better, Shiite but secular factions in Syria? You see, it makes no sense. So at the very best case scenario that you could possibly draw out, it's that everyone in D.C. is so stupid as to be as de facto evil as they could possibly be. It doesn't matter what their intention is. Their policy is simply to sow more war indefinitely, backing all sides in this chaos. This is no plan to defeat the Islamic State, as even some of the experts on Fox News are starting to run up against their own arguments. Jeez, I'm sorry, Shep. I'm not sure how to explain this war in a way that it makes sense for us to be in it, dude, really. It gets more and more difficult, doesn't it? The more you actually take on actual facts as part of the discussion, well, what are we supposed to do? Back Muqtada al-Sadr and the Badr Brigade and Iraqi Hezbollah? Hey, Al Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.
Cool. I just introduced Gordon Prather and Yosef Butt. Rat.
All right. Hey, coming up on the show, Jason Leopold will be here to talk about the barbarians, the torture state. Yeah. Anyway, so listen, you know, I don't know, man. It's sort of like communists marching every day. Nobody cares what they're marching about anymore. So that's me on this show. Hey, I'm against the war in Iraq, and then I just say the same thing every day, and then it doesn't matter. I guess it wouldn't matter if I saved it all up for one big announcement either. But I just don't know what else to do except sit here and say, like, hey, don't do it. We don't have to destroy the Islamic State. I'm here to tell you right now, if the president's formulation that America must destroy the Islamic State stands, then we're going back to a full-scale invasion. Other than a bunch of really lucky airstrikes and really lucky circumstances where really lucky airstrikes lead to the dissolution of the group, it's within the realm of possibility, okay? You can't deny that, but it's extremely unlikely. Even if you took out the whole leadership, there'd be somebody new. Even if he couldn't, you know, credibly claim that he's the caliph, he'd still be the leader of the Islamic State of Iraq and al-Sham, just like before. Or maybe it'll just be the Association of Helpers, like the al-Nusra Front again. They'll just be al-Qaeda in Iraq again. But anyway, America's not going to get rid of them. And the thing is, it would take the Americans to get rid of them, but then you'll still only make them more powerful anyway. It'll still only blow up in your face anyway. So just stay out. Forget it. Let the Iranians fight it. It's going to blow up in their face. Let the Badr Brigade fight. Those guys deserve to die. So they're just as bad as the Islamic State. So if the Islamic State fighters and the Badr Brigade fighters all hack each other into little pieces, then good. And I don't mean all the innocent Sunnis and Shia around them. I just mean the Islamic State fighters and the Shia militias. And that goes for the Mahdi army, too. Those guys are a bunch of torture, killers, sicko, psychopaths, too. Hasib al-Haq, they're like the Mahdi army, only even worse. And then, of course, there's the Bada Brigade, who bring their power drills with them everywhere they go, so that they can put power drills through people's skulls as their favorite method of torturing people to death. These are supposed to be America's allies in this thing? The people that George Bush fought an 8-year war for, because that's what the Ayatollah tricked him into doing because he's stupid? And no, that's not just in effect. I mean, no, really. Read How Chalabi Conned the Neocons. That's the greatest article. Man, you'll just be kicking yourself. You'll be stopping and say, honey, hey, come and look at this. Listen to this great quote. You'll be laughing your ass off in the most cynical and sarcastic and brutal way, reading How Ahmed Chalabi Conned the Neocons. How he tricked a bunch of Israel firsters into doing Iran's will by getting rid of Saddam Hussein, you stupid idiots. Great article, man. Great article. I actually hadn't read it in about 7 years or something, and then I was recommending it to some people, and I thought, you know, I'd take a look at that thing again. And then I reread the thing, and I just couldn't believe it. That's who I was referring to just now. What you're going to do, I was referring to my own self. Hey, honey, come here and look at this quote. That was exactly what I said. Look at this. Where Chalabi, they quote Chalabi's cousin. Saying, yeah, so the plan was to trick these Jewish guys into thinking it would be good for Israel. Yeah, Wolfowitz and Pearl and them, they're really stupid. Yeah. Yeah, they're really stupid. I go on these tangents sometimes. How Chalabi conned the neocons. Just Google that right up and you'll think it was my tangent was worth it. But anyway, so why should America continue to do what the Ayatollah wants? Why should America back a bunch of torturer killers against another band of torturer killers? And by the way, the Islamic State, those guys basically are... They seem to be doing everything they can to destroy themselves. They don't have that much manpower in the first place. And yes, some of them are from Iraq, but they've adopted a policy. They're basically acting like the kookiest kook from the Arabian Desert, which is not where they're from. They're from Iraq, where people aren't used to living like that. And people don't like it. Same thing for the Syrians, too. And Baghdadi, when the war nerd is absolutely right, when he says that Baghdadi is just, he's shooting himself in the foot to say there is no Iraq, there is no Syria. All Muslims from all over the world, everyone come here and administer my new government. Well, what does that look like to a bunch of Iraqis and Syrians who do still very much consider themselves to be such? What does it look like to them? A bunch of Chechens and Egyptians and Libyans and Syrians coming to boss them around in their land. As Patrick Coburn reported, coming to people's houses and doing a census to see how old everybody's daughter is because we might just want to marry her. Say the militia kooks that just rolled into town. We've seen this before. You know, the closest thing to a success you could point to from the era of the surge was not part of the surge. It was the local Sunni population of Iraq getting sick and tired of the so-called Islamic State of Iraq way back then in 06. You're not the Islamic State of Iraq. We're the ones who are from here. You're a bunch of, they didn't say residents of far western Islamic State. They said you're a bunch of Libyans. You're a bunch of Syrians, you're a bunch of Saudis and Chechens and foreigners, and you're not the boss of us. You can go to hell and watch my rifle prove it. Bam. That was the awakening. It wasn't David Petraeus. That was going on all through. We were reporting that at antiwar.com and on my show all through 2006. Look, guys, local Sunnis turning on Al-Qaeda. Cool. All through 2006. Petraeus took charge in 2007. Case closed. And they're the only one. And you know what? I don't even think the Shiite militias will do it. I don't think Sadr will serve under American air cover. He may work with the Quds force on the ground, the Iranian militia commanders on the ground, to hold Shiite territory. But I don't think those, I don't think the Peshmerga. But I doubt the Peshmerga, and I sincerely doubt that the Shiite militias are going to be willing to even try to march to Mosul, to march to Fallujah. Now, they say they've got Tikrit surrounded, so maybe they could besiege Tikrit and drive the Islamic State out of there. I guess it's possible if they're going to lay siege to them. But, you know, it was the American chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said it's going to take an army of 80,000 good soldiers to take Mosul. Well, who is he talking about? He's talking about the American 3rd Infantry Division, and you know it. Oh, or the Marines, whichever. He's talking about Americans are going to have to do this. So now's the time, everybody. Figure out, I don't know. It ain't me. I don't know. But you figure out how to organize the Americans to stop this. Because it's going to just be an absolute catastrophe. And it already is one. America started bombing on August the 8th in Iraq. And according to America's own intelligence agencies and consensus all across the planet, it's done nothing but strengthen them. As thousands more fighters are flooding into Iraq to take part in the great jihad against the American crusaders again. A whole new generation again. Hey, Al Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. Darren's Coffee. Order now at darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and save $2. Darrenscoffee.com. Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org. All right, guys, welcome back now. Leopold coming up in a few to talk about the torture report. Hey, So listen, those of you who are the regular listeners, you know I spent the last few years warning about Obama. Well, I spent the last decade being right about all of this crap. But the last few years I spent specifically warning about the consequences of Obama's policy of backing the Mujahideen against Assad in Syria. And I spent specifically all spring just about in a damned panic interviewing as many people as I possibly could think of who are real experts on the modern incarnation of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. They're fighting that war in Syria. And if you were listening close, you heard me. I talked with, I can't remember her name, but that lady that wrote the great thing, friend of Prothero's, wrote that great thing in Politico magazine about the rise of al-Nusra and ISIS. I interviewed Landay and Scheuer and Giraldi and Coburn over and over again, and Prothero as well, and just focused on the danger of the Islamic State and how far they've gone. Flint Leverett, of course, and others. How far they've gone, how much of a danger they were, and just waiting for the other shoe to drop. You probably heard me specifically predicting in the interviews with Landay and Scheuer in April and May of 2014 here earlier this spring, predicting that the other shoe is going to drop and America's going to have a ground war in Iraq and Syria. That's what I told them. It's the rise of the Islamo-fascist caliphate that never existed before, that George Bush and Barack Obama have created. First from the east and then from the west. And they, you know, this Islamic State is a real place now. And this is before the fall of Mosul and the reinvasion of Iraq, the conquering of Anbar and northwestern Iraq by the Islamic State in June. So if you appreciate that kind of thing, hey, help support the show. And here's how you can support the show without just, you know, donating, which is fine too. Sign up for monthly subscriptions or send gigantic checks or, you know, whatever you want to do. You can do PayPal, single donations, whatever you want. Anybody donates $100, you get QR code commodity disc, which I think is the awesomest future of currency for mankind. There's that. Or you could advertise on the show, which is great. But you know what else, too, is do all your Christmas shopping that you're planning on doing at Amazon, or maybe the stuff that it just occurred to you. Yeah, I guess I could get that stuff on Amazon. You could stop by scotthorton.org first and just click through the link there. Or just, in fact, type in scotthorton.org/Amazon, and it'll forward you right on to Amazon. But then at that point, there will be a cookie in your browser, so anything that you buy at that point, I get a kickback from their end of the sale. The show, this institution, the Scott Horton Show, gets a kickback from their end of the sale, not yours. It doesn't cost you an extra penny, but if I can get, I don't know, quite a few of you to do the bulk of your Christmas shopping through my Amazon link, then maybe we'll have a happy Christmas around here too. Wouldn't that be great? And maybe the show will survive for another year, so I can continue to warn you about what terrible stuff is about to happen that I can't prevent. No matter how accurately I warn you about it. So there you go. ScottHorton.org/Amazon. And thank you very much. And one more thing on housekeeping. I heard another podcast where the guy said, hey, review me on iTunes, would you? And it occurred to me, oh yeah, I guess I did see a place on my iTunes page where a few people had written pretty nice reviews of me there. But it never occurred to me to ask people to do that. But geez, for those of you who hate the show, I mean, for those of you who really like the show, if you'd like to write something nice on the iTunes there and give me some stars, that might help with the rankings and this and that stuff that I don't understand. And especially if I could make it a habit to ask you guys all the time about that. Hey, why not review the show on iTunes? You know, if you think it's worthwhile. All right. And then, man, Jason can only do a short segment, so I can save the cops until the last segment of the show today. I promise I'll do the cops. I'll cover the cops for you. A couple of things I want to point out here. Jim Webb, the former Democratic senator, is running. He actually has formed an exploratory committee. So, blam, a challenger to Hillary Clinton. And, you know, you look at his voting record, I'm sure you're going to find some horrible evil in there. And he ain't no libertarian. But I admit I kind of have a little bit of a soft spot for Jim Webb. Because he seems like, I don't know, maybe he's kind of a selfish jerk, but in a way that makes him a little bit immune. A little more immune to some of the pressures on him to conform. He's a little bit of a rogue candidate. And as a cookie cutter anyway, never mind details, but just on the general principle of the thing, he's a gruff, tough guy, ex-Marine, and he's more of a peacenik than Hillary Clinton, who, of course, was never a nurse in the Air Force or any such thing. She was a hippie back when she could have been serving her country. Stinking hippie. And so he's got that whole thing where he's got warrior credentials that she doesn't have to go along with his less, not non, but less interventionist position. And so, thank God, glory, hallelujah. I don't care. You know what? He's horrible on a bunch of stuff. I don't even know. You can send me 100 quotes of him being horrible on Iraq, Iran, and Saudi and Pakistan, and God knows what. It wouldn't surprise me at all. I'm not saying he's great. All I'm saying is I want there to be a fight. All I'm saying is I want Hillary Clinton denied the power that she quite apparently thinks she was born with the natural right to. Like we all were born owing her authority over us. No, actually I don't like you, lady, and I don't want you calling shots actually for anyone. I wouldn't wish you on my worst enemy. Well, maybe on the Islamic State. But other than that, she'd make a great Baghdadi, don't you think? Up there on the balcony, ranting and raving about God's will. Anyway, so I'm really happy about the Jim Webb thing. Let's hope that there's a big fight there. I'm not saying I support him or I would support him. I'm just saying I hope that there's a big fight between him and Hillary Clinton for the Democratic nomination. All right, And I went on too long about that. I almost ran out of time already. I want to point out that, and I don't know a whole lot about it, but apparently some Al-Qaeda in Yemen guys denounced the Islamic State today. And I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but I like, you know, picking up a little bit of the scuttlebutt there. You know, J.M. Berger and is it Andrew? Was it Yellen Zellen, the guy from Winep? There are a few of these online, you know, Twitter terrorism experts, and I learned some interesting things from them from time to time. And it's nice to see where you have guys in Pakistan and Libya and in Egypt all declaring their loyalty to the Islamic State. You also have not just so-called moderates, but even jihadists who hate the Islamic State's guts and stay and split from them. Little something. All right, more news in a minute. Oh, the Ryzen book. I got to talk with you about that. Funny. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. All right. Next up, it's our friend Jason Leopold, writing nowadays for Vice, news.vice.com. The Senate report on CIA interrogation is about to reignite debate over the killing of Osama bin Laden. And I just wanted to mention, too, here, this story at the Huffington Post. I want everybody to look at today. Torture report fight erupts in chaos. And this is a meeting between the White House chief of staff and the Senate. They're all fighting about just how much of the summary of the torture report we're ever going to be allowed to read. Welcome back to the show, Jason. How are you doing?
Doing well, Scott. Thanks for having me back on.
Very happy to have you back on the show. So, well, let's just start with the biggest obvious question first. How much of this summary are we ever going to be allowed to read, and when?
I do think that we'll eventually get to see the 500-page summary, and I believe that they're in the home stretch right now, so there is quite a bit of pressure, obviously, on the White House and the CIA. And I think that come December, before the Democrats have to relinquish control or when they go on their break, the report will be out, but it's really important to note that this is only a 500-page summary. The report itself is 6,300 pages, so we're getting less than 10% of the entire report. The executive summary is redacted. It is... The issue is revolving around the names. Mm-hmm. I do believe that we'll eventually get to see this. And eventually, meaning before the Republicans take over.
Oh, that's good. I mean, it was looking like people are saying, hey, man, we're going to have one of these outgoing senators just risk his life and get up there and read the damn thing into the record.
Well, here's what you should know. The report itself is already declassified. Dianne Feinstein, the chairwoman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, can release it right now. She can release it even though the White House and the CIA have said that the names or the pseudonyms should remain redacted. So the report itself can be released. They can also go onto the Senate floor and decide to declassify certain material themselves and read it into the record. So it's not as if the report will not, or rather that the report could not come out at this point. No one is blocking the report from coming out. They want, obviously, as much detail as possible to be released. And right now, it revolves around the names. So it's not as if this document cannot, we won't get to see it. They can release it. I believe that the issue regarding the names is something that is a sticking point, because it kind of removes some detail about who did what and when. And
right, like they're saying they're going to use pseudonyms, but they don't want to use the same pseudonym consistently for the different CIA officers who did this, that, and the other thing to anybody, which, you know,
right,
that's what
so,
you're talking about.
Yes, and the reason they don't want to do that is because then we'll be able to figure it out. So, for example, if there is a CIA officer who was in Thailand in 2002 and was involved with the interrogation of Abu Zubaydah, who was held there. And then this CIA officer ended up in Poland, and then in 2003, and then in Guantanamo, say in 2006. And then this CIA officer was eventually promoted. And if the report contains that pseudonym, and we get to see the CIA officers sort of rise in the ranks, it'll be very easy, Scott, to figure out who it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that's what the CIA and the White House don't want to happen. They don't want people like me, human rights groups, to be able to figure out who these people are and eventually unmask them.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, because what? They're afraid that this will really change the game, and there will be demands that these men are prosecuted. I mean, it seems like if the story's told, even without the specific names, the demand for prosecution isn't going to be more or less either way.
I think the only demand for prosecution would come from human rights groups, would come from perhaps some foreign government.
I guess it would be more powerful if they can really name names, yeah.
I highly doubt it. It's the same excuse that we get, that journalists get when we go to Guantanamo, for example. I cannot photograph a nurse who conducts force feeding at Guantanamo. I can't photograph a guard or use a guard's name. And the reason is because the officials at Guantanamo will basically say that I would be putting their lives in danger. But when these same guards return home, their hometown newspapers not only photograph them but print their names. So certainly there seems to be something else behind all of this. I don't think that prosecution is the is the big issue behind this. I think that it's trying to get some more detail about who was involved, and ultimately what that would result in terms of declassifying the entire program.
Right. Yeah, I see what you mean. And so it really could be a game changer. You can see why they're trying to stifle it as much as they possibly can there. So what about extra murders? Because they've admitted to only two, the CIA, on the CIA's watch, and Durham already did a preliminary investigation to see if he would have an investigation into whether he would have an investigation into maybe prosecuting that, and then he decided forget it. And yet there are three more who were apparently murdered by the CIA down at Penny Lane at Guantanamo, as the other Scott Horton has documented in his great journalism. And surely, I mean, I know the military killed most of the 100-something people that were tortured to death, but surely the CIA killed more than the two they admit to. You think that's in the report? Do you have any word about that?
No, I don't think that's in the report. I think we'll see details about one death that took place at a CIA black site in Afghanistan. But what you need to know is that this report, and this is based on my own investigation and a story that I recently published about the report, is that the report looks at 20 case studies, so 20 cases involving high-value detainees. Now, there were 119. So the larger report that we will not get to see has 99 other CIA prisoners that contain case studies on them that we're not getting to see. What we're getting to, what we'll eventually get to see are the detainees that we've heard about quite a bit over the years. We'll get to hear some details about the efficacy of the program. So it doesn't even go into John Durham's prosecution. It doesn't go into anything about the Geneva Conventions. This is simply goes into details about the CIA's effectiveness statements about the high-value interrogation program.
Right.
And that's it. So much of this, I don't mean to sort of burst a bubble here, but for people who have been following it for quite some time, the executive summary will seem familiar. Yeah. As I documented in my report, it deconstructs George Bush's September 6, 2006 statement in which he revealed details of the program. And it undercuts statements that were made about the effectiveness of it.
Right. All right. Well, I know you got to go, but thanks again for coming on the show, Jason. Talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Scott.
That's the great Jason Leopold, everybody. He's at Vice.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. All right, you guys. Welcome back to the show. Yeah, that's another show right there. Happy to have y'all here. All right, I'm Scott. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. First of all, I wouldn't even bothered, man, really. I mean, the guy's okay, but he's a New York Times guy, so how far outside the lines is he really gonna draw? You know, I don't know. But Gareth Porter said you gotta read James Risen's book. And Risen, he's the guy, they're persecuting him over the NSA leak story in 2005. But the reason that they're persecuting him is because he told the story of the CIA furnishing ready-made implosion bomb blueprints to the Iranians because they suck at being the CIA, Operation Merlin there. And so that's why they're going after him. So I guess this is his version of, oh, yeah, well, I'm going to write another book about you bastards then. And because he's at the top of the heap, man, New York Times, National Security Beat. He's got a lot of sources, and he tells a lot of stories. The first one is about all the cash that the Treasury and then the Federal Reserve sent to Iraq after the invasion. And you already know some of this, but he develops the story further. Just humongous pallets of $100 bills just vanished. You know, Matthew Ho was on the show a couple weeks ago, said, yeah, I was there, man. I helped deliver that money to Azaz al-Hakim. I knew I was freaking out a Z, leaving out a Z in there, freaking one out. Al-Abdul al-Aziz al-Hakim.
Oh, it's the first "al" is extra. It's Abdul Aziz Al Hakim. That's what screwed me up, is I started with an "al" where there ain't one. That's the leader of the Supreme Islamic Council, Iran's man in Iraq, and George Bush thought his. Anyway, and then the next story is also really funny, too, and it's about a guy who scammed the CIA that he had software that, first of all, was the ultimate in object and facial recognition beyond your wildest imagination for use for drones and for facial recognition for people in public, etc. And then, and from distances. Oh, yeah, he could facially recognition every Taliban man on a mountaintop from here, supposedly. Oh, yeah. And then also, he had the magic software that could decode all the secret Al-Qaeda messages on Al Jazeera. I mean, we are talking about stupid crap. You remember their lie that we won't show you what bin Laden has to say about why he kills you because there might be secret messages in there. And you remember thinking, you guys are such liars. You won't even put on the speech of the enemy. What do you think he's going to do? Win us over? But you're going to black out everything that the other side has to even say when they're talking directly to us? We're adults, those of us who are adults. What the secret codes? Come on. Well, no, actually, some kook had sold them that. And as he explains, because of the narrow self-interest of the CIA's science division, that this was their chance to participate in a little terror warring, they grounded a bunch of flights. And entertained the possibility of even shooting down passenger jets based on this guy's bogus information. And he was purely just making stuff up. And it was the French who debunked him. They said on the face of it, his technology couldn't do what he says it could do. They said Al Jazeera's technology couldn't do what he says they're doing. The whole thing is a freaking hoax. But up until that time, this was some of the highest level privileged information they were telling the President of the United States about impending Al-Qaeda attacks on America. It was completely wrong. It was a complete hoax from a local haberdasher. You know, those guys can become presidents. But this guy, yeah, anyway, you read it. It's funny. It's funny. Just goes to show how much influence one person could possibly have on an entire foreign policy, you know, on the future of mankind. Dennis Montgomery, that's the guy's name. Complete fraud, the basis of some of the highest level CIA briefing, so-called data that they were sharing with the policymakers there in 2003, right around Christmas 2003, about a bogus impending terrorist attacks, etc. Yeah. And then, the cops, man. I got so much cops news and I'm almost out of time. We'll get back to the Islamic State tomorrow. The Islamic State did a suicide bombing in Erbil, Kurdistan. That's a first since June. They've been attacking inside Baghdad for a while now. That's a first up there. I failed to get a hold of Coburn or Prothero to talk about that today, unfortunately. They've both written, Coburn's written about it and Prothero's there. I know that. So, anyway. But maybe next week. And then Israel news. I want to talk about the way they murder kids and the way the Israel lobby got rid of George Bush Sr. Here, you thought it was the American people got sick and tired of George Bush Sr. because of what a murderer he was and everything else and got rid of him. No, it was the Israelis who decided to get rid of him, who regime changed his ass for Bill Clinton back in 1992. You can read all about that at the American Conservative magazine. But here, under the police state news here today, and almost all of this you can find at the Liberty Crier and or on my Twitter feed. Here the cops kick in the wrong door, throw flashbang grenades at everybody, beat the crap out of everybody, tie everybody up on the couch. They're going for the back room, and the mom cries at them. There's a two-year-old boy in there. There's a two-year-old child. You know, a toddler, just barely quit being a baby not too long ago. Cop doesn't care, throws a grenade in there anyway. Anyway, doesn't even look to see. just assumes a threat. Wrong house. Wrong house. They didn't even check to see whether the guy that they were looking for still lived in that house. He had moved away 4 months before. This family had no relation to the suspect whatsoever. It's not that he had been staying with them or anything like that. They could have called the landlord. They could have sent a deputy to sit and watch the house for a minute. Nah. 4 months ago is their latest intel before their Delta Force night raid on this American family. Their assault on a 2-year-old child with a grenade. I was going to say they're lucky they didn't kill him, but it doesn't matter. All they get is a 2 weeks paid vacation to Bermuda. If they'd killed the kid. No, only the kid is lucky they didn't kill him. And let him say, oh, a flashbang grenade isn't a weapon. Tell him, oh yeah, we'll set one off in your hand then. We'll stand right here and watch. Here, we'll put one down your pants and pull the pin, pig, and see how you like it. If it's not a weapon. Oh, these cops are such tough guys. Make them pretend like they're at war against the women and children of Afghanistan when it's just the mere women and children of America. Here's another one where, first of all, this guy murdered his wife because she wanted to smoke a joint on New Year's. So he put a gun to her head and he blew her brains out. And then he admitted it. I can't believe I did it. And then the rest of the cops showed up and helped him create a lie that it was a suicide. They were all conspiring to obstruct justice and let this murderer cop get away with murdering his wife. Even on a Saturday night, off the clock, he has a license to murder anyone he wants. But then apparently some other pigs from a different jurisdiction decided that they could benefit themselves by blowing the cover up and going ahead and indicting him. Boy, if only he'd been on the clock, he could have murdered his wife, his mother-in-law, her sisters, her nieces. Here's a great piece by Radley Balco at the Washington Post about the New Mexico, and especially the Albuquerque police and their training about how Americans are evil. And they're holding back the tide, describing the American civilians of the suburbs of Albuquerque as though they are Al-Qaeda warriors in America. Here's a cop in Canada was going 72 kilometers per hour, 50 miles an hour over the limit, killed a 5-year-old, no charges.